Avenger. Over the minds of mortal men come many shadows. Shadows of greed and hate, jealousy and fear. Shadows which fog the minds of men and women, which urge them on into their venture in the dark. Dark Venture. The American Broadcasting Company presents Dark Venture, written by Larry Marcus, directed by William T. Johnson, and featuring Joan Banks in Elizabeth is Frightened. And now your host for tonight's journey into darkness, John Newland.
This is John Newland. Tonight we search through the dark city for Elizabeth. The night is unbroken by stars or moon. There are only the thin, pitiful street lamps, the flashing headlights of an occasional speeding car. The hour is 2. The chimes in the gray cathedral boom hollowly in the empty streets. An ambulance races down Main, its red warning light flashing on and off quickly, like the fevered... A newsboy stands on a street corner waiting for the last bus. A tall girl in a thin coat hides in the shadows of a cigar store, waiting for nothing at all. But we go on, for we must find Elizabeth down Ardmore Drive. Now the darkness deepens. Now it is a quiet, dignified darkness draping itself over these fine homes. Now here at last we have reached Elizabeth. This is Elizabeth, tossing and turning in her sleep, in the grip of some terrible dream that will not release her. By the faint moonlight filtering through the curtains, we watch her strange struggle, her head twisting feverishly from side to side, her fingers clawing at some invisible enemy. And then suddenly the struggle becomes too much.
No! No, no! It's only a dream. Everything all right. It's only a dream. You won't hurt me again. Go back to sleep. But I can't sleep. Remembering. Yes, always the same. I can't forget you, Philip. No matter how hard I try. I don't know who introduced me to the stranger in town, Philip Bailey. I suppose we were brought together because at 45 he was an eligible widower, and at 28 I was well on my way to being an ineligible old maid. But from the very first I was fascinated by him, by his strange mind. And he was so honest and kind, and I admired him for that. I remember how he spoke of his first wife, Martha.
You would have liked Martha, Elizabeth. She was so wonderfully alive. The winter she took sick of pneumonia and died, I simply couldn't believe it. For weeks afterward, every time the doorbell rang, I thought, this will be Martha. I've been dreaming this terrible thing. I've only to throw open the door and she'll be standing there, smiling.
A month after we met, Philip asked me to marry him, and I accepted at once. Everyone was happy for me. Everyone agreed it was a good match. Everyone but my housekeeper, Flora. When she heard I was to be married, she let me know how she felt in no uncertain way.
I've known you since your mama brought you home in a pink blanket, and I can speak plain, Elizabeth. I think you're making a mistake.
How can you say that, Flora? You hardly know Philip.
Yeah, I've got a feeling, that's all.
Oh, Flora, a feeling.
Well, what do you know about him, Elizabeth? What do you really know?
I know that when I'm with him, I'm very... very happy.
He knows that when he's with you, He's within grabbing distance of a lot of money.
Oh, Philip was right.
Hmm?
He warned me that's what people would say, that he was marrying me for my money. Well, I want to show you something, Flora. I have a copy of it right here in my desk. Here. I want you to read this.
Waiver of rights. I, Philip Bailey, do hereby relinquish all rights and claims to all real and personal property of Elizabeth Bronson for the duration of her natural life.
How do you like that, Flora?
Well, on paper it looks all right.
When we returned from our honeymoon, Philip took over the side room on the first floor for his study. He filled it with his books and sealed himself off from everyone for hours. Yet we still had time for dinners and the theater and house parties. One night in our home, Philip met Dr. Davis, who'd been our family physician for many years. And here was the first indication of what was to come.
No, Doctor, I don't agree at all. I have found that the most exciting aspect of psychiatry is the brutal and terrifying manner in which one mind can dominate another.
You mean hypnosis, Mr. Bailey?
Hypnosis, I dislike that word. It smacks of the vaudeville stage. But to me, it's utterly fascinating how I can look into another man's eyes, thrust my will into his very soul, and force him to do my bidding.
Of course, but only a quack would use hypnosis that way.
A quack?
That's
I'll see
right,
you, Doctor.
That's right, Bailey.
By heavens, it sounds like you two are about ready to start punching each other in the nose.
I think I'll be going, Elizabeth.
Well, Doctor, you were to stay for dinner.
Now let the doctor go, Elizabeth. I don't think he'd enjoy his dinner anyhow.
But everything really began 2 days later, in the early evening, with the ringing of the telephone.
I'll get it, Lulu. Hello? Oh, hello, Helen. A bridge game tonight? Well, I'd like to, Helen, but Elizabeth hasn't been feeling too well lately.
Philip.
No, I guess it's just nerves, but she does need rest, you know. Could you excuse her just for tonight? Thanks, Helen, thank you. Goodbye.
Philip, why in the world did you tell her I wasn't feeling well? I feel wonderful.
I guess I'm just selfish. I don't want you to go to any bridge game tonight, darling. I want you to stay home with me.
I see.
Why else would I tell her that, darling?
Will that be all, Mrs. Bailey?
Let me see. Razor blades, toothpaste, hand cream. Yes, I guess that's all, Mr. Martin.
Okay. Oh, by the way, are those sleeping pills helping you any?
Sleeping pills?
Those pills your husband picked up for your nerves.
My nerves?
Yes.
But I don't understand. Never mind.
Are you feeling better these days?
Yes. Yes, I'm feeling much better.
Of course I told the druggist they were for you, darling. I thought they'd be easier to get that way.
Oh, then you really bought them for yourself.
Yes. I guess I've been doing too much reading lately. Just haven't been able to sleep so well.
Philip, what did you mean, easier to get? It's only a mild sedative. Anyone can buy that medicine.
Well, I just didn't want a lot of people gossiping about me. Why make such a big issue out of it, Elizabeth? Why else would I have told the druggist that?
Is that you, Flora?
Yes, it's me, all right. It's me.
Did you get all the groceries for dinner tonight?
Yes, I got everything.
Oh, I want everything to be just right. It's quite a celebration, you know. Just 6 months ago today, I met Philip. What's the matter, Flora?
You feel all right, don't you?
Oh, why, of course I feel fine.
Oh, more people stop me on the street to tell me how sorry they are you're feeling so bad, and they hope you'll be better soon.
Well, I don't understand that. I don't understand it at all. I'll get the phone. Hello?
Hello, is this Mrs. Bailey?
Yes.
This is Mr. Rossi, the baker.
Oh, yes, Mr. Rossi. Are the cakes for tonight ready yet?
What's that? What's the matter with you, Mrs. Bailey?
I beg your pardon.
Well, less than 1 hour ago, your husband came by to tell me to cancel the order. You're too sick for the party tonight.
What?
I say, less than 1 hour ago, your husband...
I heard what you said, Mr. Rossi. Why did you call?
Well, I husband. I think you should pay for the cakes anyhow. I make them especially for you. I'm not going to sell them to anyone else today, and by tomorrow they'll be stayed.
Well, will you hold the line a minute? I want to talk to my husband about this. He's in his study.
Oh, sure.
Too sick for the party tonight. Why is Philip saying such things? Why is he?
Yes, what is it?
I must see you right away, Philip. I'm coming in.
Elizabeth, I've asked you many times not to come into my study.
But I want to ask...
Am I being too presumptuous and wanting a place where I can read and think in privacy?
Philip, I didn't mean to disturb you, but Mr. Rossi...
Who?
The baker who was supposed to have prepared our cakes for tonight. He called saying you canceled the order because I wasn't well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I told him not to bother you. I'm tired of all these parties. I want time to read and be alone, Elizabeth. I couldn't tell him that was the reason for the cancellation, so... Well, I said you were ill. I meant to explain. It slipped my mind. Is that so terrible?
No. No, I suppose not.
Why else would I have told the baker that, Elizabeth?
No, Anne, I'm not really sick. Who told you I was? Mr. Rossi. Well, I'm perfectly all right. Just a little tired, maybe. But, Francis, I'm all right, really I am. I know what Anne said, but it's just my nerves, that's all. No, Francis is wrong. I'm not ill. I'm just tired, that's all, Grace. Well, I may not sound too well, but I assure you, I am all right. Yes, I'll take it easy. Yes, I promise.
What is that husband of yours trying to do, Elizabeth?
Why, what do you mean, Flora?
You know what he told me this morning?
What?
He told me to throw your sleeping pills in the furnace.
But they never were mine. He bought them for himself. I've just been taking them for the last few nights because all this talk about my health has made me so upset.
I know that. But do you know why he wanted me to throw away the pills?
Why?
Because... According to him, he was afraid you were thinking of committing suicide.
All right, Flora, that'll be enough from you. You can pack up your clothes, Flora. Get out of this house.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? Well, I'm not getting out of this house, my mighty, high and mighty...
Well, you'll do as I say.
Flora, go into the kitchen, please. I want to talk to Mr. Bailey.
She's leaving this house, Elizabeth.
I'll not let him harm you.
Please, Flora, please do as I say. Go into the kitchen.
The day when he came to this house, that's all I can say.
She'll have to leave, darling. I won't allow her to upset you.
She's not upsetting me, Philip. I'm perfectly all right.
Well, of course you are, but you should rest more. You shouldn't allow yourself to become so excited.
So much has happened that I can't understand. Why, everyone in town seems to think that I'm practically on the verge of suicide.
Elizabeth, what are you saying? You mustn't even think.
It's true.
It's that woman who upset you with her lies. She's got to leave this house, Elizabeth.
Flora lived in this house even before I did, Philip. I can't tell her to leave.
And my wishes mean nothing?
Oh, it's not that.
I know the mind and how it works. I know it far better than your doctors. I know you're in peril, that you need rest and quiet. And I won't allow this fishwife to fill your brain with poison. You must make her go, Elizabeth.
No.
I see. You imagine that... She is your wall against all evil. Is that it, Elizabeth?
Perhaps she is, Philip.
Well, I think you need a lesson.
I spent the rest of the day in my room. I was so confused, I didn't know where to turn. What had happened to me, to Philip, to our marriage? What was going on? Come in. Oh, Flora, I meant to come down and see you. I'm sorry about what happened this afternoon. Philip didn't mean half of what he said. Flora, what's wrong? You look so strange. Flora, answer me. What's wrong? Flora, talk to me. Flora, what are you going to do? You slapped me. Have you gone crazy? Flora, come back here. Flora, why did you do this to me? Speak to me. Why did you do this to me? Flora! Flora! I was stunned. I couldn't believe what had happened, but I could still feel the sting of her hand. Why had she done this to me? After a while, I found enough courage to go looking for her. She was in the kitchen preparing supper as though nothing had happened. She looked up when I entered.
Hello, Elizabeth. You look tired, dear.
Flora, why did you do it?
You mean tell that husband of yours what I thought of him? I just
That's
had to
That's not what I mean. Why did you come to my room and...
Come to your room? What are you talking about? I've been down in this kitchen all afternoon preparing supper.
You're lying, Flora.
Now, why should I lie? Honey, what's wrong with you? The only time I left this kitchen was when Mr. Bailey called me into the library to apologize for the way he talked. I took his apology with a grain of salt, I can tell you.
Then you weren't in to see me this afternoon?
No.
Flora, telephone Dr. Davis. Tell him I must see him right away. Then I want you to go over to your sister's house. Stay there till I call you.
And when Flora came into your room, how did she look, Elizabeth?
Well, I didn't realize it at the time, Dr. Davis, but she walked as though in her sleep.
And she told you that she was with your husband before this happened?
Yes.
Yeah. Then under the circumstances, I'd say Flora was walking in her sleep, a hypnotic sleep.
Hypnotic sleep?
I never mentioned this to you, Elizabeth, but when I first met your husband, I discovered he was a firm believer in hypnosis.
But what has Philip to gain by doing that to Flora?
Oh, I imagine you goaded him into his little display of hypnotic power. The real question is, what would he gain by doing that same thing to you?
Nothing at all. He couldn't touch my money, if that's what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
Why, he'd just about have to talk me into killing myself. Doctor.
Yes?
This morning, he told Flora he was afraid I was going to commit suicide. He started talking town that I'm moody and nervous, and he...
Pardon me. Yes, nurse, what is it?
Mr. Bailey is in the waiting room.
Oh, no, doctor.
What does he want?
Oh, he just wants to know when Mrs. Bailey will be ready to go home. He stopped by to pick her up.
Doctor?
Send Mr. Bailey in.
Yes, sir.
I don't want to see him. I never want to see him again.
Elizabeth, what's happened, darling?
Your wife felt ill, so she came to see me, Mr. Bailey.
What in the world is wrong with
you? Let's not waste time. There's a train leaving here for the East at 6 o'clock. That's just 30 minutes from now. You'd better buy a ticket for that train.
Elizabeth, what's he talking about? I don't understand.
I'll help you to understand. Your wife is afraid that you're trying to make her commit suicide.
What?
But if everything else fails, you'll use your knowledge of hypnosis to accomplish her death, just as you used it on Flora this afternoon. Now, maybe I don't have enough evidence to accuse you of trying to kill her. But if you're not on that 6 o'clock train, I'll talk to the district attorney.
Do you believe this, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Do you want me to leave?
Yes.
All right. I'll go. I'll wire you later. You can send my things on to me. Goodbye, Elizabeth.
Later, I drove with Dr. Davis to the railway station. And from the parked car, I watched Philip emerge from the station carrying a suitcase and board the waiting train. I waited until the train was gone, and then I telephoned Flora. Well, Flora, he's gone. He's gone for good.
Good riddance to bad rubbish, I say. I'll go right over to the house.
No, Flora.
Hmm?
No, you stay with your sister tonight. I'd rather be alone just for tonight.
Maybe that's a good idea. My sister and I were planning to go to the movies. Well... You'll call me in the morning, won't you?
Yes, Flora. I'll call you. Afterwards, I had a good dinner. Went to a picture show. It was during the show that I started getting the strangest feeling. Almost a premonition. I couldn't understand it. I thought perhaps it was just the darkness of the theater and the natural reaction of everything that had happened today. I left the theater and wandered around the streets trying to find a reason for not going home. What was wrong with me? What was I afraid of? And then, for no reason that I can explain, I called the railroad station.
Hello?
I'd like to inquire about the 6 p.m. train, please.
You mean for tomorrow night?
No, the one that left tonight.
Yes, what about it?
Well, there hasn't been any trouble with it, has there?
Trouble? What kind of trouble?
I mean, it wasn't delayed any place along the line or anything like that.
No, of course not. not. That train's 400 miles from here by now.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, that was a silly thing to do. And then I did something even more silly. I dialed my own number. What was wrong with me? Who did I expect to answer the phone in that empty house? After a while, I hung up. Then I went outside and took a cab home. I just couldn't sleep. I sat up in bed and turned on the lamp. The clock said 1:35. Perhaps a glass of warm milk would help me relax. I started for the kitchen to prepare it. When I passed Philip's study, I saw the door was half open. Oh, it gave me a start. I hurried over and turned on the light. Study was empty, of course. But all his books were still there. Then I went to the kitchen. I prepared the warm milk and I took it back to my room with me. But the milk didn't help at all. I couldn't sleep. I thought of calling Flora, but I couldn't disturb her at this time of night. And then a tiny feeling started growing in me, as faint as the ticking of a watch. I wanted to go back to Philip's study. The feeling grew, gnawing at me. I wanted to go back to Philip's study. Finally, I couldn't stand it any longer. I got up from my bed and put on my robe and started down the hall. I opened his door again and snapped on the light. I told myself the reason I had come here was to decide what I'd do with this room. I'd destroy every evidence he'd ever lived here. I'd throw out the bookcases and paper the walls and change the curtains. I went over to his desk. In the top drawer, I found a packet of papers. Letters from Martha, his first wife. Their marriage license. Here was her death certificate. Martha Ellen Bailey. Died August 23rd, 1944. Age 25. Cause of death. Suicide. But he told me she died of pneumonia.
No. Martha killed herself, Elizabeth. Yes, she killed herself, poor dear. And she was so young.
I saw you get on that train.
The train makes so many stops, Elizabeth.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. Not a thing. But I rather imagine your Dr. Davis will be sorry when he finds out that in spite of my going, you killed yourself.
No, Philip.
But then again, perhaps he'll think you killed yourself because of my going. Out of love, my darling.
Why are you doing this?
There are many reasons. The one that you would understand concerns your money, of course, and the fact that it becomes all mine upon your death.
I'm getting out of here.
No, Elizabeth, wait.
You're hurting.
You'll not run
Let
away.
Me go, please.
You'll not run
please,
away.
Please, Philip, please.
Look at me, Elizabeth.
No.
Look at me.
No.
You'll not
Philip.
Run away.
Philip, don't.
You'll not run away, Elizabeth. You'll stay here because you want to stay. You want to stay, Elizabeth. You don't want to run away. You want to stay with me. You want to stay with me, Elizabeth. You want to stay with me. You see, I let you go. You could run away if you wanted to, but you no longer desire to run away. You want to stay with me.
I...
You want to stay with me. Isn't that right, Elizabeth?
Yes. I want to stay with you.
Yes, of course you do. You love me very much. You believe in me. Isn't that right, Elizabeth?
I believe in you, Philip.
Elizabeth, this afternoon you told me to go away, that you no longer loved me. Now, kiss me, Elizabeth.
You see, there are no magic words, no secret formula. Merely my mind imposing its will upon yours. Elizabeth, in the bottom drawer of my desk, you'll find a gun. Get that gun. That's right. Now come back here to me and give me that gun. You do these things because my mind is stronger than yours, Elizabeth. You would stand here and you would let me kill you if I wanted to. Wouldn't you, Elizabeth?
I would stand here and let you kill me.
But I do not want to kill you. You take the gun, Elizabeth. That's right. You take the gun. They'll find your finger stiffened around the trigger, and I'll return to the town I left. And in the morning, someone will call me and tell me you killed yourself because I left you. And I will be very unhappy. Take the gun and turn the barrel to your heart, Elizabeth.
The gun.
Turn it to your heart. Not to me. Elizabeth!
Someone heard the shots and found me standing over Philip's body. I explained that Philip had hypnotized me. And there was no trouble at all, not even a trial, because no one is responsible for their actions in a hypnotic state. And since then, everyone has been so nice to me. Dr. Davis, Flora, my friends. Everyone's been so helpful and understanding, and I'm very grateful. But still, I find it so hard to sleep, because always I wonder, does everybody truly believe that when I killed Philip, I was actually hypnotized?
Yes, Elizabeth has trouble sleeping. And when she finally falls asleep, her dreams are far worse than any insomnia. Because no matter how many times she tells herself that Philip deserved to die, she still remains a victim of her own guilt. Maybe we've found our moral, that deep within each of us is a pathetic longing to do only good in this fleeting life. And that no matter how we may ridicule this longing, no matter how we may rebel against it, no matter how it annoys us in this sophisticated world, the goodness remains to torture us when we do evil, and to always remind us that we are more than we seem to be, that perhaps we might even be the children of God. And if that thought embarrasses you, well, I rather imagine there are times when it also embarrasses him. Good night, folks. See you next week.
Listen next week for another Dark Venture with John Newland. Featured in tonight's story was Joan Banks as Elizabeth and Hans Conrad as Philip. The others in the cast were Janet Scott, Bonnie Phillips, Jack Petruzzi.
Dark Venture. Over the minds of mortal men come many shadows. Shadows of greed and hate, jealousy and fear. Darkness is the absence of light. So in the sudden shadows which fog the minds of men and women are to be found the strange impulses which urge them on to their venture in the dark. ¶¶ for tonight's venture in the dark, we bring you Mr. Charles Barrett in Eclipse.
Tell me, Mr. Police Commissioner, how long ago did life begin for you? 40, 45 years ago? Well, life for me began about 24 hours ago. Yeah, 24 hours ago, I woke up. I was lying in a ditch beside a railroad track. When I first opened my eyes, I saw the sky. It was clear and very blue. I sat up and saw that my knee was sticking out through a hole in my pants, that all my clothes were dirty and torn. I started thinking, wait a minute, what's happened to me? I rubbed my eyes like you do when you first wake up. My hand ran across something sticky. I looked at my hand. Blood. Yeah, dry, sticky blood. I figured I must have fallen off a train or been thrown off. I got up. Then this bum started walking up to me. I could see him quite a way off.
Hey there, young fella.
Yeah?
You hurt?
No, I'm all right.
Well, what's the matter?
Nothing. I'm all right. Dizzy, I guess.
You've been kind of banged around.
Yeah, I guess I have. I better rest a bit.
Sure, Pete, sure. That's the idea. What happened? Get bumped off the rods?
I don't know.
Well, how'd you be in the ditch if you wasn't bumped off the rods, huh?
I don't know, I tell you.
Okay, Pete, okay.
My name isn't Pete.
Oh, well, I just call everybody that. What is your name?
My name is... Well, my name is...
Well?
I can't remember my name.
You can't remember? Are you kidding? What are you trying to pull? Don't even know your own name.
I tell you, it's true. I don't know. I can't remember.
It's not so easy to forget your own name, Pete.
Look, don't ride me. Something's happened to me. I don't know just what, but something's wrong.
Well, where are you from?
What?
Where are you from?
I don't know that either.
Well, what are you trying to get away with, Joe? You can let me in on it. I won't spill.
I'm not trying to get away with anything. I just can't think. I just can't remember. It's crazy.
Hey, you really got it bad, ain't you, Joe?
Well, let me see. No, it's no use.
Hey, look in your pockets. Maybe you'll find something with your name on it.
Yeah, maybe. I never thought of that. At least it's a chance.
Yeah.
But,
what's wrong now?
There's nothing in my pockets. They're empty.
You're in bad shape. You don't know who you are, where you're from, and you ain't got nothing in your pockets. Where you heading?
I can't remember.
Well, if I was you, the first thing I'd do is try to find out who I am. That's kind of important.
Yeah.
Well, I seen the train pass through, the train you fell off of, and I don't know where it was headed for, but I do know where it started out from.
Where?
Chicago.
Chicago?
Yeah. Now, the thing for you to do is head right back to Chicago and start asking questions. And, oh, maybe you better pay a little visit to the hospital and have them look at your beam. Now, Pete, you don't look so good to me. You don't look good at all.
Yes, Mr. Commissioner, that's how it started, with loss of memory, amnesia. That was bad enough. But if I'd known how much bigger and more terrible my problems were going to be, I never would have come back to Chicago. Anyway, I hitchhiked in. When I saw how people were looking at my torn clothes, I thought I'd better pay a visit to a tailor.
Good afternoon. Come in.
Thank you.
Such a beautiful day, I don't feel like working already, but when it's got to be, it's got to be. What can I do for you?
Well, my clothes...
Such a mess. You had an accident, eh?
Yeah, I'm afraid I did.
What's the matter with me? Sit down, sit down. You look terrible. You could use a little drink, some brandy, maybe?
No, thanks. I feel okay now. I'd just like to have these clothes sewn up and pressed a little. Could you do it while I wait?
Certainly, and with pleasure. Look, go into the back room and throw your clothes through the door. You'll find the wash basin. You can wash that cut on your face.
That's very kind of you. There's only one thing.
Yes?
I'm flat broke. I couldn't pay you for them now. Maybe in a day or so.
All right, a day or so, a week or so. Go on, make yourself at home. And while you're washing up, I'll mend the pants. I'll get them in first-class shape.
So I went into the tailor's little back room and took off my suit. Then I went over to the washstand and started to wash. My head felt better as soon as I got a little cool water on it. I sat down. I tried to figure what would I do. Where would I go from here? Then I noticed something about my pants belt. It was bulky, had a little zipper in back. When I opened it, money started falling out in tight rolls. Bills were crisp and new. I thought my heart was beating loud enough for the tailor to hear it as I counted the money. There was $50,000.
Hey, mister, how are you coming with the clothes?
Huh? Oh, yeah, they're ready. I'll hand them to you through the door.
Good. I'll have them fixed up like new in no time. You sit there and relax. You look like you could stand it.
Yeah, relax. Relax with 50,000 bucks strapped around my stomach. Well, the little tailor fixed my clothes, and I looked fairly respectable again.
You know, I never seen such nice material in a long time as that suit.
Is that so?
Yes, it cost a beautiful dollar, believe me. Where did you get it?
Where did... Wasn't there a label on it?
No, the label had been ripped off, so why am I asking so many questions? Goodbye and good luck.
What do I owe you?
So when you earn a few dollars, come back and we'll figure it out, eh?
Well, let's do it.
About $20? But before you said you were broke. This I don't understand.
That makes two of us, my friend. You can imagine how I felt, can't you, Mr. Commissioner? I didn't know what to do, where to turn. I thought of going to the police, but something in my subconscious mind warned me against it. When I looked fairly respectable again, I went out on the street and began walking. I didn't know where I was going or why. 50,000 bucks. I tried with every ounce of strength to crash through the wall that separated me from my past. Oh, it was no use. I must have walked for miles, because suddenly it was dark. I was on a dismal little side street lined with hock shops, hamburger joints, and honky-tonks. And then some punk kid brushed against me.
Hey, mister.
What?
You better fade fast.
What?
You're being tailed.
What do you mean?
A guy's been following you for the last hour.
Following me?
Relax. Don't get so jumpy. Boy, you must really be hot. Now, look into this window. You can see his reflection. The tall, skinny guy in the white suit.
I see him. How do you know he's been following me?
Because I've been walking a little behind you ever since you turned down 14th Street. And I can tell when a guy's being tailed.
Why are you telling me then?
Because maybe you'll be a big-hearted guy and slip me a bill for it. And because maybe I don't like cops.
Cops?
Sure, sure, he's a cop. I can tell him a mile away. Yeah, you must really be hot, mister.
It's easy to say now that I know what I should have done, Mr. Commissioner. I should have gone up to this guy and had a showdown right then and there. But panic is a funny thing. It begins almost before you know it, and there's no cure for it. No cure at all. I began hurrying as fast as I could. And I didn't stop until my wind gave out and my legs weighed a ton. Then I looked back. I'd lost my friend in the white suit. But for how long? I had to find a place to sleep that night. I saw this little hotel on a side street. Straightened my tie, wiped the sweat off my face. Started through the lobby. There was no one at the desk. I rang the desk bell. A little fellow with glasses came out.
Yeah?
I'd like a room.
Rates are a dollar and a half in advance.
That's all right.
No luggage, huh?
No, we're just staying overnight.
That's all right. Very few of them bring any luggage. What's your name?
Huh?
Just want your name for the hotel registers, huh?
My name is Bronson. Howard Bronson.
Howard Bronson. I thought for a minute you were going to say you were one of the Smith boys. Here's the key, Mr. Bronson.
Okay.
Now for the dollar and a half.
Yeah, here.
$20? Is that the smallest yet?
That's all I have.
All right, I suppose I can change it. You sure it's good? Didn't make it yourself now, did you?
It's good.
Oh, no offense. Just my own little joke.
Okay. I'll take another nickel out for this newspaper.
Sure thing, sure thing. And here's your change. Now, why don't you go up to bed? You look very tired.
I tried to sleep, but it was no use. Why had that man in the white suit followed me? What had I done? Not knowing almost drove me out of my mind. Out of my mind. I was already out of my mind. And finally, I must have dozed off, because I was suddenly in the middle of a terrible nightmare. No. No, I won't give it up. I won't stay there. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. Leave me alone! Bailey! Bailey!
Mr. Branson? Mr. Branson?
What?
Are you all right, Mr. Branson?
Yeah. Yes, I'm all right. Who is it?
The room clerk. Would you open the door for a minute?
Yeah. Come in.
Several of the guests heard you screaming. We wondered.
It was nothing, just a nightmare, I guess. I'm all right now, I think.
I'm glad to hear that.
Is that all you wanted to know?
Not exactly.
Well?
A detective came in a while ago inquiring about somebody.
Detective?
Yeah, city detective. That is according to the badge you showed me.
Who did he want?
No one named Bronson.
Then why are you bothering me for?
It wasn't Bronson he asked for, but his description of the man fitted you exactly.
How long ago was he here?
Oh, about 20 minutes ago. Your name is Bronson, isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
You know it's technically against law to register under a name.
My name's Bronson.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, that's all. He must have wanted somebody else. Says he's been checking up on all the hotels in this neighborhood. Says he might drop back later.
What did he look like?
Oh, tall fella, kind of slim, wearing a white summer suit.
White summer suit?
Yeah. You don't see many of those nowadays, do you?
No.
Yeah, you sure you're over your nightmare? Huh?
Yeah, I'm all right now.
Okay, then. Good night, Mr. Bunsen.
Night. Oh, say.
Yeah?
That fellow does come back.
Detective?
Yeah, the detective. If he does come back, let me know. I just want both him and you to make sure I'm not the one he's looking for.
Okay, Mr. Branson. You're in there.
After that, I didn't want to sleep. I got very jittery. I paced the room. I smoked one cigarette after another. Why had I said that to the clerk? I couldn't be so lily white with that 50 grand strapped to me. Still, maybe it would be better to have it out with the guy once and for all. Finally, I forced myself to sit down. I picked up the paper and started to read. The front page was filled with news of a war I couldn't even recall and names that meant nothing to the shadow that had engulfed my mind. But down in the corner of the front page, what was this? A detective slain on train. Detective slain on train. George Bailey. Chicago Detective Bailey. The man in my nightmare was found dead this morning in a roomette on a westbound train. Police officials report that he was on the trail of one Joe Latterly, who is believed to have killed a detective during an attempted arrest. Police throughout the state are on the lookout for Latterly now. He is known to be carrying $50,000 in stolen currency. $50,000 in stolen currency. Now, what was I going to do? I was not only a thief, I was a killer. But funny thing, somehow I didn't feel like a killer. I didn't feel like a killer at all.
Mr. Bronson! Say, that detective came back. He's here with me now. He'd like to talk to you.
Detective? Oh, yeah, sure. Be glad to talk to him. Well, wait just a second, though. I'll throw some clothes on.
No, thank you. I wasn't having any of this. The only thing I could think about was to get away. I rushed to the window, raised it. A fire escape led right down to a back alley.
Open up, Mr. Branson.
I slid over the sill and started down the fire escape. As I raced down the steps, I heard excited voices above me. And then they were shooting at me. This was a new sensation, Mr. Commissioner, and not exactly the most pleasant feeling in the world. Well, that convinced me. I was a killer. A killer at bay. What could I do? Where could I go? It was almost midnight. There was not one person in the world that I could turn to, that I knew. Well, I didn't even know my own name. Wait a minute. Wait a minute, yes. Yes, I did know my own name. Joe Latterly, the newspaper said. Joe Latterly. I saw an all-night drugstore down the block. I closed myself in the phone booth there. Started thumbing through the directory. Sure enough, there it was. Joe Latterly. I wrote down my address. Began dialing my telephone number. And while the number rang, I felt a cold sweat come rolling down my face and neck, soak into my collar.
Hello.
Hello. Is this the Latterly residence?
Yeah. Yeah, what do you want?
This is Joe.
Joe?
Yeah.
It don't sound like you.
I had a little accident.
You get the money?
Yeah.
Any trouble?
I killed him.
Oh.
Look, I better see you right away.
Yeah, but don't come here. The cops are thick as flies. You better meet me at the usual place.
The usual place?
Yeah, at Mom's.
Okay, at Mom's. Oh, hey, look. This accident kind of messed up my memory. What's Mom's address again?
229.
229...
9th Street, apartment 204.
204, okay, I'll see you there.
Gee, you sure sound funny. Joe, what happened?
I'll tell you about it when I see you.
So I had a wife, and she was in on everything. You see, Commissioner, the jigsaw puzzle was beginning to make some sense. A wife. I couldn't even remember the color of her hair. If only I could break through the shadow. 10 minutes later, I was standing in the entrance of a very classy apartment hotel lobby, not a soul in sight. As I began looking down the list of numbers for the right doorbell to ring, I felt myself going shaky again. There it was, 204. I pushed the bell and waited. Then the door buzzer sounded. I pushed open the door and started across the lobby. No one in sight. No one. That was a break. Pulled my hat down over my eyes as I started up the steps. See, I was beginning to think like a hunted man, like a killer. I took the stairs to the second floor. I started down the hall. 200. 202. The next door, 204. The door was ajar. I wanted to call my wife, but what was her name? Honey? Honey, are you there? No answer. I pushed the door open. The room was in darkness. I felt along the wall for a light switch. Found it. And there, waiting for me, was this detective. The tall, skinny guy in the white suit. I let my nerves take over. I jumped from the room, slammed the door shut, and started running again. But this time he had a better chance at me than before. As I hurried through the empty streets, I could hear him coming right behind me. I ducked down alleys and across backyards. He was right on my tail. I couldn't run much further. I was all pooped out. Then I bumped smack into somebody.
Hey! Watch where you're going.
I didn't see you, officer.
Well, I'm not exactly an officer. I'm a night watchman. But who are you running from?
Why, nobody. Nobody at all.
I looked up and down the dark street. The detective was nowhere in sight.
I don't know. You weren't exactly strolling along. Come over here to the streetlight. Let me take a look at you.
Well, if you must know, I got in a little jam with a lady.
Oh, so that's it. The way you run, I bet you're a hard man to catch.
Yeah.
Well, get on with you and be more careful next time. You may not always get a head start.
I guess that's right.
Good night to you.
Oh.
Yeah?
I live on the other side of town. What's the quickest way to get home?
Yeah, there's an elevated train station 2 blocks from here. That's your best bet.
Okay.
You better hurry, though. The last train pulls in at 1 o'clock, and it's pretty close to that right now.
I'll hurry. Night. I began walking again. Once I got away from this neighborhood, I'd have a chance. A chance for what? I wasn't sure. But a man with 50,000 bucks could do a lot of maneuvering. I saw the lights of the elevated station ahead, and in the quiet night, I heard the rumble of the approaching train, the last train. I started jogging. I couldn't miss that train.
Hey! Wait up, you!
Took a quick glance over my shoulder. It was him again. My friend in the white suit. I raced up the steps 3 at a time. When I got to the top, he was at the bottom.
Stop! Or I'll kill you!
I'd never heard a deadlier sound than that voice. The last train was just pulling in. The detective was coming up the stairs, kind of slow. For some reason, I didn't have time to figure out. The train stopped. The doors swung open. I got in. The doors closed, and the train was on its way. I looked back. The detective was standing on the platform just looking at the train. I didn't get it. Why hadn't he come after me? I couldn't figure it. Then I decided I'd better get some information from the conductor. Say, can you help me?
Yeah, sure. What do you want to know?
Where's this train go?
63rd Street.
63rd Street, huh? Can I get the state highway from there?
No, you're going the opposite way.
I've kind of mixed up my directions, huh?
Well, the only way to get where you're going is to take another car back to the loop.
Thanks. That was what I wanted to know. I decided to get off in a block or two in case the cop was waiting for me at 63rd. He must have figured he could beat me there. He'd probably have quite a little reception committee waiting. So I got up, started to walk to the door.
Hey.
Yeah?
Where you going?
Well, you said I was going the wrong way. I'm going to get off at the next stop.
No, you can't get off till 63rd Street. This is an express.
I was just about ready to crack. I knew it'd be curtains for me as soon as I got off the train. I kept hoping for a miracle. Maybe the train would crack up or stop one station too soon or... Oh, no. No, it was no use. Finally, the conductor called the station.
63rd Street, 63rd.
And the half dozen sleepy passengers started getting up and heading for the doors. Then I got an idea. Maybe I could stay in the car. Maybe I could wait. When the last passenger got out, the conductor looked over at me.
This is where you transfer back to the loop.
Where's the train go?
Up a few blocks, and we turn around and head back.
Well, couldn't I go back with you?
Sorry. You got to get out here and cross the bridge.
Oh, but I don't see any harm.
I don't make the rules, buddy. The company makes them for me.
Well, I tell you, I'm just going
to... Hey!
What's the matter?
There's somebody behind you.
Just come with me. I got a gun right against your back.
It was him. I felt the gun rubbing against my spine. I knew I had only one chance. So I whipped around. I was lucky. I caught him with a hard right and he went down. I jumped fast and got his service revolver. He didn't stay down long, though. As he got up and lunged at me, I let him have it. Right between the eyes. So there's my story, Mr. Police Commissioner. I'm Joe Latterly. I killed 2 cops. One today and one last week. I stole 50,000 bucks. I'm tired of the whole thing. I'm glad it's over.
It's quite a story, mister. I don't suppose you remember how or why Detective Bailey was killed last week on that train out of Chicago?
No.
Well, we've reconstructed the crime pretty well, we think. Began a week ago when a fellow named Steve Roycroft came to headquarters with a complaint against one of his employees whom he suspected of embezzling $50,000.
And that employee was...
Joe Latterly.
I see.
Latterly had disappeared and Detective Murphy was assigned to the case. Later that day, he found Latterly taking the morning train out of Chicago. He called Roycroft and told him about it. Both Roycroft and Murphy made the train on Latterly's trail. They confronted him and got back the 50 grand.
Who got the money back?
The man it rightfully belonged to, Steve Roycroft.
Well, where did I...
Just a minute. Roycroft got his money back, but Latterly made another try. He overpowered Murphy and killed him. He would have killed Roycroft, too, but Roycroft jumped for his life from the speeding train.
Wait a minute. You got it wrong. I jumped from the train, remember?
Exactly.
But you just
said... You're not Joe Latterly, my friend. You are Steve Roycroft. When you got your money and jumped from the train, you lost your memory. Then, when you read that we were looking for the killer, Latterly, you naturally assumed that you were him. Of course, we thought Latterly still had the money.
Good heavens.
What's the matter now?
Well, don't you realize what I've done?
What?
Well, thinking I was Joe Latterly, I killed the detective who was trying to bring me in.
Detective?
Yes, just now, on the elevated platform.
Oh, but that wasn't a detective at all.
Well, then who...
He was Joe Latterly trying to get back his money. Or should I say, your money.
Joe Latterly.
That's right. And there won't be any charges. You killed him in self-defense. Yes, it was Joe Latterly all the time. That's why you met him in that apartment. It was his hideout. I know this has been a great shock to you, Mr. Roycroft.
Shock, yeah?
You're not well. You need rest. I've sent for an ambulance to take you to the hospital. A psychiatrist there will be able to help you recover the balance of your memory.
I hope so. I hope they can make me forget what I thought I was.
How do you mean?
I've lived the life of Joe Latterly too well. It's done something to me. I'd begun to think like he must have thought. Like a hunted killer. It's not going to be easy to return to the commonplace, routine existence of this Steve Roycroft after what I've been through. No, I hope I won't become too bored, Mr. Commissioner.
Next week, at the same time over most of these stations, we'll bring you another original story about the land of the shadows. The story of two killers and of retribution out of the forgotten past. Join us then to examine at first hand the strange impulses which urge human beings into their dark venture.
Eclipse was written by Larry Marcus and Robert Light and featured Charles Barrett as Steve Roycroft. Original music by Dean Fossler. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To check out our other storytelling podcasts like Let's Not Meet and Odd Trails, go to crypticcountypodcasts.com. We'll see you next time.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story,
that's what ought to happen next.
It did.